Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello, and welcome to Altered Geek, the podcast that is ever-evolving and being altered, as is our geekdom. We discuss anything from television and film to gaming, streaming technology, podcasting, and simply put, things we geek out to. I'm your humble host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and as always, thank you for tuning in. This episode is the second of this current format, and I hope you enjoy this. Please let me know what you guys think. You can let me know on Twitter at SCP21. So without further ado, here's our question of the week. The first one being, are there shows that you once were loving but have had the feeling to pull the plug on? A few of these get touched on in the future presentation part of the show with Movie Revolt Dan and myself talking comic books. But a few shows that I've kind of pulled the plug on are, for instance, like Supernatural, Black Lightning, Supergirl, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Some of these have been gradually over the past year or so. But that's kind of the boat that I've been in, is kind of just dropping shows. I don't really want to pick up any new ones for the most part, unless it's like something I'm really interested in. Lethal Weapon, I'm kind of on the rocks with, but being that the series is pretty much ending anyway, give or take, which we'll get into later. I don't know. There's not much I would give up at this point because not much is left that I currently watch. The other question is, what are the tech gadgets you bring with you everywhere you go? For instance, Digital Trends published an article saying that they've got some like noise isolating earbuds, some cord organizers, a mini power bank, a USB rechargeable lighter, smartphone camera lenses, which that I'm kind of thinking about, just because the camera quality on my Galaxy S5 kind of sucks. The RFID wallet, which I'm increasingly thinking about, they have a TNG Star Trek Isolinear chip USB drive, which is interesting, although the storage isn't really there for the cost. They have a nano keychain flashlight, they have a keychain multi-tool, a folding Bluetooth keyboard, a health tracker, and a plethora of other items. An 8-bit DOE Mini Zero Bluetooth gamepad, which I didn't even know they made these. It's about the size of a Nintendo Game Boy gamepad, which I might have to add this to my list for, it's $17. They have mini arcade games, they've got GoPro Hero, they've got Bluetooth smartwatches, more power banks, more Bluetooth speakers. Now for me, I pretty much carry like all of my USB chargers, or at least a variation of them. USB plug for the wall. I carry all of my flash drives and external hard drive. Because I never know what I'll need that may not be in the cloud. I do have a Bluetooth remote that I can take pictures or video with my phone on a phone tripod that I have, which I carry with me because I never know if I'm going to need it for stationary purposes, which I plan on using once I get some kind of remote video type stuff set up. I plan on getting like a remote microphone. I do have a lapel microphone, which is kind of eh. It was like $5, so it's not really that great a quality. But I have those plethora of items that I carry with me. I always carry like a notepad, extra pens, stuff like that. So I have an iPod. I have a set of, funny enough, Philips over the ear headphones that I use for everything from my phone to my iPod. So those are kind of the items that I carry with me. So what are some that you carry with you guys? And so this week's question is, since this week's episode of the feature presentation with Movie Revolt Dan and myself is about comics, What are some comics that you wish to see hit the big screen or hit the small screen? Like, for instance, myself, I want to see Batman hit the small screen again. We've had everybody else hit it except for Batman. So it remains to be seen what happens there, but that's kind of my goal there. So switching over to the What's Geeky to You segment.
Follow private message procedures. You went rogue, now look at us, having it out in the comment section.
Dude, you've turned into a monster.
You made me this way.
So on What's Geeky to You, we have Geek Responsibly. Yes, our syndicated, partnered, affiliated program that is on geekcastradio.com. Awesome show from Bridget and Jenna, which myself and TFG1 Mike talked to them on the recent episode of Geekcast Radio, episode 188. Yes, the numbering is a little off, but that's because we've kind of unified all the numbering systems network-wide. So anyways, we recorded that episode last week, and it came out. Which was actually a lot of fun to converse and to kind of play around with voices, which has spawned the fact that I'm going to be recording some Dr. Seuss books in character voicing for Halloween. So among those books are Green Eggs and Ham, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and Red Fish, Blue Fish. So look forward to seeing those, or actually more so hearing those, on a episode of Altered Geek probably next week. It's going to be kind of a special episode of the podcast, so there'll probably be two next week, or possibly more, of me reading those or having a possibility of having more of these things in the future. So anyways, there's that. As well as GeekCastRadio.com is also doing the GCRN Wars Tournament of Wrestling. They're conducting the voting amongst GeekCastRadio.com on the episode post, Facebook and Twitter, and putting together the poll between the varying locations. So they're racking up, like I said, 32 team combatants to duke it out and discover who the true tag team is. So basically they're going to do this new way for this endeavor. And so basically it's through the Facebook versus polls, the Twitter polls, and the website like we used to do. All of the polls will be tabulated, like I said, and put together to create the grand total. So even if you kind of know what the total is, and how many votes are on the social media, you won't on the website because I made them disappear. So if you dislike one location for voting or want to vote more than once, this may be your chance to vote differently. So you can check it out on geekcastradio.com, under the GCRN Wars Tournament Wrestling tag area. Voting for round one ends Monday, October 22nd at 8 p.m., so get those votes in, and I will be sending them over. So, without further ado, we'll be going into our review section of the podcast, where I'll be covering Last Man Standing episodes 1 through 3 so far.
I'm trying to DVR my favorite show, but it's not on.
Oh, well, maybe it got canceled. You know, the TV business can be a heartless bastard.
Hey, canceled? Why would they cancel a popular show that everybody loves?
Maybe they're a bunch of idiots. Just try another channel.
Oh, no, Mike. They don't just take a show off one network and put it on a different one.
Hey, there it is. You were right, Mr. B.
Am I wrong, or is it, like, way better on this network?
Way better, way better. I'll be damned. I've never heard of this happening before.
Well, it's pretty rare, but the show must have a lot of loyal, kick-ass fans, huh?
So without further ado, we're going to be covering Last Man Standing. So anyways, they mention the first episode is Welcome Baxter. So like, haha, welcome back, Baxter. And they kind of poke fun at ABC throughout the entire episode of the fact that they kind of start out with, you know, why would a station cancel a highly rated great show? And then, you know, Tim Allen's character Mike Baxter goes, because they're stupid. And then it kind of goes through. So anyways, the return episode, they have recast two characters, Boyd and Mandy, because Boyd, just for whatever reason, kid, you know, aged out, or they just didn't want to use that actor anymore, and it's easier. So Mandy, they'd replace because the actress didn't want to return. So anyways, they brought also Robert Forster back as Bud Baxter in this episode. Jay Leno, it's funny that he's in this series at all. So they start off the first episode mentioning how Ryan's in a funk since the election, doing little aside from watching cable news and moping around his house. And so Mike snaps him out of it, advising him to focus more on his family than the current political climate, which backfires because Ryan takes this to mean he should move to Canada, which culminates in Boyd running away from home. And then it kind of goes in this whole thing where Mike has to kind of, well, one, he knows where Boyd's at because they're working on a dirt bike. Two, they said, but they, in the episode, they mentioned it's a birdhouse. Two, they managed to get papers for Ryan to apply to be a U.S. citizen so that he can vote and make a difference, which is an interesting twist for it. The second episode, Man vs. Myth, which has to do with Mike Baxter's father passing away, and Mike refuses to admit that he's sad because his father rarely showed him affection. And then it's a constant battle between the family and Mike about throwing away Bud's stuff. And then Kristen and Ryan want to take over the marijuana store that he owned. And so, you know, Mike just wants to get rid of everything that reminds him of his father. And then Kyle gets a new office job at Outdoor Man, where he's in a slew of annoyingly disturbing costume changes throughout the episode. And Mandy just seems to be like kind of, I don't know, I'm not really a fan of this actress on here. And it may have to grow on me, but I'm just really not a fan. And then the third episode is Mike giving away the business, or giving Mike the business, in an effort to save Outdoor Man, which I think this is the best one we've had so far, of originality is on the episodes. But all the season's been pretty strong so far. In order to save Outdoor Man from a hostile buyout by a larger corporation, Ted, you know, they mention how Ted's tackle box got bought up by this other company. Mike proposes to expand and improve the Outdoor Man chain. However, Ed is leaning towards selling. Mike convinces Ed to not sell. But then Ed announces that he's retiring, leading Mike to worry that he may have hurt Ed's feelings and drove him to leave. But Ed kind of assures him that, you know, he's not, and it's just his right time to leave. So he retires and leaves Mike in charge. And everybody groans at the end of the episode about the changes. And Mike's like, I hear there's a bunch of people from Ted's Tackle Box that are laid off looking for work. And so everybody jumps to work. Jay Leno's got a couple of funny lines in this, and so does the neighbor and everything. So it's a really fun episode. A lot of idiocy between Mandy and Kyle in this, which is nothing different. The next episode is Bride of Frankenstein. And then they've got One Flew Into the Empty Nest, and then The Courtship of Vanessa's Mother, which is after that. So that's all I have, you know, planned thus far into the season. So it remains to be seen how many more episodes there are. I it doesn't really say. This is at least, you know, for the first half of the season that they've got so far. I've been enjoying the show. I enjoyed it the first time it was on. I like the few digs that they've done on Fox, but their slogan at the top of their banner for season 7 actually says new home, new season, same attitude. And it's, you know, it's on at the same time. It's, you know, it's basically in the same slot, just different channel. But yeah, I really enjoy this show. This is one of the few that I wouldn't mind watching several more seasons. But yeah. So anyways, that's kind of my thoughts on the season. I give this so far like a 4.5 out of 5. I rarely give anything a 5.5 just because I don't think everything is perfect on everything. I would say the first episode I gave more of a 5 out of 5, although some of the trope had been done before. The second episode I gave a little bit more of a 4. I enjoyed it, but it seemed, I don't know, too down. But it did kind of show that the Mike Baxter character does care about his father despite everything. And then the third episode, I think, has been the strongest so far, which I would have given a 5, just coming right off of it. But yeah, it's still doing great. I mean, I don't mind it. And then the fact that they've, you know, picked it up a year after the season 6 finale, I really love this show. So without further ado, going to be moving on to the next part of the show, which is Hot Topics of the Net. Did you ever notice that everything seems to be breaking news anymore? Like, seriously, it's just getting to be absurd. I thought it was funny that CBS News actually posted a article stating that breaking news, you know, if you're just joining us, I'm covering some breaking news. You know, news is breaking because I'm telling you so, and I might touch my earpiece like this, and it's also important you read breaking news right there on the corner of the screen. Faith Saley on CBS News the other day posted this, how every station has like a breaking news thing or alert, or you know, basically don't turn away from our channel. Every cable news outlet has the same thing. It's like a staple, like block piece of garbage image that's on everything now. And they've shown it on like CNN, MSNBC, Fox. You know, everything is important right now. You know, like it's the boy who cried wolf. You know, and they were saying that, you know, breaking news is not a new angle on an ongoing story. It's not, you know, a presidential tweet, and it's not, you know, something that 45 million Americans are under the threat of extreme weather. They're basically saying that historically breaking news meant a trusted broadcaster interrupted a program with an urgent report of something everyone should know, which, you know, rarely happened. So people would snap to attention because, you know, some man was making a as the world turns, stop turning type motion. And then they show like the absurdity of it, of like the cable news and the 24-hour channels needing news all the time, where it says, you know, like there's an image that they screenshot saying breaking news, Justin Bieber facing judge at video bond hearing. Who cares? or you know, I don't know. It just seems like news is just, you know, breaking news is just fake urgency, and that's what they've kind of commented on here. It's rather interesting when you look at it, and that's the same thing with pop culture and with superheroes and everything else. If you look at Twitter, everything is like a, oh, check this now, oh wait, blah blah blah. It's you know, everything is like this immediate, like, pay attention to me thing on everything. It doesn't even matter what it's about, whether it's a film, whether it's an article, and then you see like 100 websites post the same thing right after each other, and it's like, okay, we get it, you know, everybody's got the same news. There's no point in everybody doing the same thing, pretending like this is like this huge announcement, when it's not. Like, it's not, it would be like running Comic-Con every day, all year. it would get old and you would just not care. Whereas it's like during a specific set time, you know, it, I don't know. I felt like that was something that kind of hit the nose on the head there, and people were kind of, you know, not that it was like a hot topic thing, but something that just kind of interested me there. The other thing that was posted is, and I saw this on LinkedIn the other day, and they said that music piracy is still rampant, despite, you know, Spotify and Apple Music helping to resuscitate the music business. They're saying that, you know, they're convincing music fans to pay to stream, yet, you know, it remains very high. Although they do state that 86% of consumers use legitimate services, roughly 38% are engaging in piracy, according to the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry. Most pirating today is done via stream ripping, where websites create an audio file ripped from a YouTube video or another legal site. Recorded music revenue hit $17 billion globally last year, an 8% increase, driven mostly by streaming, which itself enjoyed a 41% increase in revenue. The funny thing about it is they keep whining about it, like, but there's really nothing they can do about it. Like, yes, they've kind of killed the old ways of doing it, but every time it's like the three-headed, you know, dragon. You chop one head off, three more heads grow. You chop one more head off, three more heads grow. It's like the program I used as a school joke in middle school. You know, one down, three up. You close one window, three windows open up. You close one window, three windows open up. No matter how many doors they close, there's always going to be another method of doing it. And, you know, yeah, there's legal streaming and there's, you know, commercial-based and everything else. But the thing about it is they kind of brought it on themselves. I mean, look how long that they were kind of, I mean, I get it. Everybody has to make money. And people are complaining that, you know, oh, the fans killed or destroyed the music industry by refusing to pay for it. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of just a broken system. Like, I mean, yeah, we don't have Napster, we don't have things like that now, but there's really no way around it. I mean, it's gonna happen. Like myself, I find it easier just to add a bunch of music to a playlist on YouTube and just play the playlist, rather than goof around with all that. Like, I don't even want to mess with it. I'm so lazy with it anymore. Like, it's not even worth me messing around with. Like, I'll just build a playlist and then I can just set it on play and then just listen to all of it. And I'm perfectly fine with that. But like, I've used the stream rippers, but mostly for, if I'm trying to get a specific soundbite of something and use it, within the podcast, like, you know, for instance, like the Last Man Standing thing that I played a second ago, like I'll use it for purposes of that. Like, I don't really care to do the music thing anymore. Like, I rarely listen to music as it is. I'm more of a podcast listener again, and so like it doesn't faze me, but it's still interesting to see how this is still a rampant problem that still hasn't gone away. Something else that was interesting that I noticed the other day, they said that, and this was on Inc.com, there's a new font. They did a study with 400 students and, found a new font that's scientifically proven to help you retain what you read, to increase memory, and it's free. So I'm going to experiment with this, and then kind of give my thoughts on it at a future point in time. But they said that researchers at Armit University in Melbourne have invented a new font called Sans Forgetica, which I guess they demonstrated to increase retention. It says you can download it or add it to Google Chrome for free, which I downloaded it on my work laptop just to kind of see how it looked. But basically what it does is it takes a phrase and like and kind of chops pieces out with like little circles or like little squares of things. Basically, I mean, you can use it on any PC or Mac or whatever. But you can convert, like, it allows you to convert any on-screen text to that. Like, if you install the Google Chrome extension, it almost kind of reminds me of something from like Transformers or something. But it's really, really strange. It's more difficult to read than a regular typeface, which I guess is by design, is what they state. But the desirable difficulty you experience when reading information formatted in it prompts your brain to engage in deeper processing. So I'm going to download this thing and kind of see how it goes and let you guys know next week what I think about it and whether it's done anything for me. Because I think it's kind of an interesting concept, because we do see so much information online now that we literally do forget a lot of stuff, because they kind of break certain degrees of this font on purpose. It says that students remembered 57% of what they read in it compared to 50% of what they read in Arial, which resembles basically the same thing, although it's a little bit different. It's more of a puzzle piece type design. I wonder how much of an increase, though, compared to a standard font, whether it actually does what it says it does. The other thing that kind of came out earlier in the week was Windows 10's version 1809, Take Two, their guide, which you know, that builds and what breaks, and Microsoft explained in detail all the conditions that led to the catastrophic data loss when installing the first release of Windows 10. And what you can expect from the second wave of releases. This is my whole pet peeve with it. If they knew something was broken, why would you send it out there? So, like, I guess it's one of the worst Windows rollouts in history, according to Computer World. At least since Windows 3.1 is what they say. I don't know how it turned out, because I don't get the update. It says last week's rollout of Windows 10 left some PCs with empty documents, photos, and other folders, and managed to mangle user profiles for others. They said that the net result was mayhem, with Microsoft yanking the upgrade 3 days later. It says, a week after the initial assault, we're told that Microsoft has solved all the problems and has begun a test rollout of the new improved latest version of Windows, which is only going to the insider beta testers. So if you're running 1809, it says there are three builds that you need to be aware of. 1776 3.1. Wow, why would they use 3.1? Windows 3.1? The original release, not available anymore. Upgrading this build can zap all the files in the indicated folders. 1776 3.17, the version you get if you're in the slow or release preview rings. And 1776 3.55, the version you hit if you install patch Tuesday's cumulative update. The 3.1 is the destroyer, as it's been dubbed on their website, which I find relatively humorous, but yeah, it wipes out all your documents and everything. So everything else works, but that's, yeah, this is it. They suggested you roll back to the previous version and wait for the major bugs to devour themselves. It says that 1809 has very few improvements, none of which warrant sacrificing a real working PC. Yeah, it says then the other one, the 3.17, is a partial reprieve, which, again, this is, yeah, it's not much different. And then the 3.55, only the usual bugs of Windows. This is, if you lost all your files in the folders, don't do anything. Shut down the machine and follow the revert. I would be so mad. It says it's apparent that Microsoft doesn't have a magic wand. Probably can't do better than run a Recuva or similar undelete package. If you lost contents of your documents folders and can't pull it back yourself, you're probably SOL. I would be so mad if I lost all my files in my folders. That would, oh man, that would just make me utterly mad. I'm so glad I hacked my Windows copy so that I don't run into this problem ever again. So that about rounds out this part of this podcast. So we'll be coming back on the other side with Superhero Pop Culture Depot.
At this point, he probably is.
Okay, so this isn't totally superheroes. There's also pop culture in here. So, anyways, Last Man Standing has been renewed, possibly for a season 8, which wouldn't surprise me because the comedy shattered, according to Fox officials, shattered their ratings, although they don't say what. Like I said, I'm happy about it. I love the show, as I mentioned in my little tidbit review back there. And then, I don't know if you've noticed this when you watch Arrow, they're having flash forwards instead of flashbacks now, which I'm all in favor for, but I guess they said that that will remain until the end of the series. They did that on the most recent episode when it returned, and I kind of had a feeling that's where they were going with it before hearing this news, and then it confirmed it by the end of the episode. So there's that. Lethal Weapon, Damon Wayans, may not be leaving Fox's show after all, which they're probably still going to cancel it. It doesn't really say either way, but they canceled it, so there's going to be no season 4 because of his health issues, but I guess that they've made accommodations for him. And then they've added two more episodes to the end of season 3 to kind of round out the series and end it on a high note. Although, who knows what they'll do if they backed up the money truck to Damon Wayans and made his stay that much more pleasurable on set. So they may not stop at season 3. They may go to season 4. It depends. But it wouldn't surprise me if they redact that information and take it all back. Netflix is considering ending Fuller House after season 4 just because they're considering it. Gotham's series finale, they're going to make Penguin fat. They're going to make him more like his comic book counterpart. Bane is going to be in it. Harley Quinn. So there's that. CW is doing their Elseworlds, so you've gotten to see images online of Grant Gustin and Stephen Amell as their counterpart superheroes. So like Grant Gustin dressed as the Green Arrow and Stephen Amell as the Flash. So I look forward to seeing what they do with that whole iteration and how that all works out for them. Netflix made this article that came out today about how Disney can't cancel Netflix Marvel TV shows. An executive said as they canceled Iron Fist. Like, why? Why? This is shortly after Disney's decision of like original programs. They're like, basically that Disney has no control over it, nor Disney Marvel television. But all future Marvel shows will go straight to the Disney platform, while it may or may not be true. We'll see how that whole thing goes down. I'm sure there's a money truck somewhere that decides these things. Marvel TV is basically non-existent in the grand scheme of things with the whole movie universe and the fact that everything keeps getting further and further away from where things are anyway. I still am like torn between that like Elseworlds thing of Arrowverse. I think that that's going to be funny. This is Destinies will be rewritten. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But as far as the Elseworlds crossover event where they introduce Batwoman, and they have Superman in his black uniform, and because they did preview that on Stephen Amell's Twitter, they mentioned that they're going to swap Supergirl and the Flash's night on that particular week. So the Flash will kick it off on Sunday, December 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern, followed by the Arrow on Monday, December 10th at 8 p.m. Eastern, and concluding with Supergirl on Tuesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to only watch that episode of Supergirl. I really don't care beyond that. So yeah. Yep. That's all I got to say about that one right there. And then of course there's like a little bit of controversy going on now. I guess the original Aladdin screenwriter is a little peeved, highlighting some of the shadier aspects of Disney's live-action remake craze, which is within Disney's rights, but it kind of is like a moral dilemma. And I kind of agree with him. It says that Terry Rossio expressed his displeasure of the trailer, basically, and this is quoting him, saying, "So strange that literally the only word spoken in the new Aladdin trailer happens to be a rhyme that my writing partner and I wrote, and Disney offers zero compensation to us, or to any screenwriters on any of these live-action remakes, not even a t-shirt or a pass to the park." You know, and it says that he's had other credits, whether it's Shrek, Treasure Planet, and Pirates of the Caribbean, that he's usually very prolific and cantankerous, basically just causing strife on Twitter. And it says that while they're eligible for coverage, animated movies aren't automatically covered under the normal Writers Guild of America West contracts, which usually ensure the creators are compensated for things like reuse of their work. But Disney owns the scripts outright to these movies wholesale. As the writers in the 90s were contractors, not the full-on owners of the scripts. And so it's, you know, they can do their live-action versions and reprise as much of the original iconic dialogue as they like, as with the Cave of Wonders, which is another thing that they kind of knock on. Yeah, it's kind of, and I kind of get it. Like it's, you know, they have a lot to do with the success of the animated stuff, and then they're just basically flipping the script verbatim and reusing it for the live action, and for them to not get a cut of it, seems kind of wrong on so many levels. So I don't know what you guys think on that. I personally think that that's kind of messed up, but yeah. And then in gaming, DC has their Lego DC Supervillains on that's come out, and it's to take down Darkseid and the Crime Syndicate, and it's got Clancy Brown reprising as Lex Luthor, and Mark Hamill as the Joker, and Tara Strong as Harley Quinn, and Kevin Conroy as Batman. So basically you get all the original like Justice League cast in a sense back involved with this video game, which I think is awesome. I'm gonna get this when it comes down to the cheaper scale for PC, just because I think it's fun. But yeah, without further ado, going to jump over to the featured presentation with Movie Revolt Dan and myself discussing comic books and some of the different things that have to do with like prequels, getting on board with new comics, and of course, his new video series called Starting Point. So we'll be back on the other side.
And now our feature presentation.
All right, and we're joined by Movie Revolt Dan on this part of the podcast to discuss comics.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Going well. And so I figured it would be cool to kind of have this section of the podcast as kind of a rotating panel of just talking interesting topics with different people so that it's just different interesting conversations and kind of diversifying the panel.
Nice.
So I figured we could talk about the fact that we're seeing a lot more translations from page to film on comics nowadays between television and film, and whether people, you know, like or dislike the flexibility that is used or the creative licenses in it, as well as kind of touching on some of the jumping with prequel series to certain characters, or also pimping out your new YouTube series.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, comic book movies have been around forever, really. I mean, even back in the old serial days when you had Captain America serials and Superman serials and things of that nature. But I think you're certainly, you know, there are comic book TV shows everywhere. I mean, you could argue perhaps there's too much of them. There's a gluttony of them, you know, now with we have the DC app, the Unlimited, I forget what they're calling it, DC Universe.
Yep.
And they have the Titan show, and they're getting other shows on there, like Doom Patrol. And I think there's going to be a Harley Quinn animated series with Kelly Cuoco.
Yeah. Something. Big Bang Theory, Penny.
Yeah. So there's a lot out there. I mean, and then you just, obviously, outside of just the superhero realm, I know there's some announcements of, I know there's a lot of, like, Image series and Aftershock books. A lot, like, it seems like what a lot of comic book creators are doing right now to kind of make their money in a way, because, you know, comic books don't sell necessarily, you know, what they used to in a roundabout fashion, because now you have digital sales, you have trade paperback sales, but what they end up getting much more of their money, especially for an Image book or Aftershock book, where they own the rights of the world and characters that they're creating, is getting things optioned for possible Netflix series or TV series. Like, you have someone like Mark Millar, or Mark Millar, depending on how you pronounce it. He has a partnership with Netflix, and he has, like, legitimately comics that he's making that are designed to possibly be Netflix shows. Like, right now, The Magic Order, for example, is a comic that he is out. It's like this grown-up Harry Potter world, in a way, but deals with magicians. It's pretty brutal, but I could see it being a possibly good Netflix show. There's actually, like, a Netflix logo on each book. And then you have a lot of Image series that recently got, like, there's this book called God Country, which was written by Donny Cates and drawn by Jeff Shaw. And Donny Cates is probably the biggest name in comics, not the biggest name, but the hottest name in comics right now. He kind of came along really strongly in the last year or two. And God Country was, like, one of his, wasn't his first book, but it was, like, perhaps his breakout title. And that's becoming a film, and he's writing it. And then other books, like, you have this universe, this book called Skyward, which is this world that exists where there's no gravity. And Aftershock has books that are becoming there. Other, like, there's times where there's, like, one issue and people are in there and they're trying to get them optioned. Then you have a lot of people, like, collectors, actual comic collectors, who, you know, are, you know, they try to buy books specifically for the first issue, thinking, like, oh, this might be something someday. I'm not that. I'm not the type of person that buys a book because it might be, you know, potentially worth money one day. I tend to just buy stuff that I want to read and enjoy. And if it ends up being worth something, fine. But what the new series that you're talking about that I started doing is more directed towards readers, because I know when it comes to comics, I know you read comics here and there. It can be daunting because there's so much to read. And it's challenging, especially if you want to like jump into stuff that's new that comes out on a Wednesday. It's like, well, I want to read a Black Panther comic. Well, good luck, because there's, you know, there's a lot of ways to approach that. So the idea with Starting Points is I look at ongoing series, so series that are currently going that are starting new arcs, so they should be more welcome to jump in and start reading. So you don't have to, you can pick up that book, and even if you've never read an issue of it before, kind of get what you need to know. New series that I try to, again, I'm not looking at shows that I think are books that might make someone money, but based upon the creative team or the concept, I think people would be interested in. And then graphic novels, because I know that's a big way people read comics nowadays, because it's cheaper, because, you know, buying the first issue of a graphic novel being, you know, 10 to 15 bucks against an issue, you know, where issues are like $3.99 now. So that's kind of the focal point of the series. I just had the first episode out. It actually did viewing wise much better than a lot of the other stuff I was doing, so hopefully it'll catch on. So
I think that's kind of a needed thing at this point, just because we have so many different comics and so many different storylines with varying characters. Like if you look at Batman, he's got like usually anywhere between 2 to 4 different instances going at a time, or more, just depending on things. And same with like various members of the Justice League. And like I'm not too well versed on the Marvel side. I know a lot of what goes on the DC side as opposed to that, but it does get very daunting just trying to figure out where's a good jumping on point, because either they reset every few years or they do a soft reset every couple of years at a specific issue number, and it just gets hard because the jumping around between different stories that connect and trying to figure out what you actually, you know, what would be the best point of it. And Mike's kind of had that conversation with me with IDW and their Ninja Turtles and Transformers comics, kind of telling me, okay, you can kind of skip this and kind of start here if you wanted to start here. But it's... Yeah, I think that in the world of comics, I think because there's so much of it out there, it just makes it difficult unless you kind of have this guide or even, you know, a show like yours that's going to kind of tell people, hey, you know, if you want to get on in a good series, this is where you want to go.
Yeah, and I think people have the idea that because the movies are popular that it's causing the comic books to be popular, but that's not necessarily the case per se. And I think a lot of it, it's because, you know, we have seen that effect. Like the Walking Dead comics have been ridiculously, you know, sell really well. Like volume one of Walking Dead is constantly one of the best top selling graphic novels each month, because people like that show, and it's easier to jump onto because you have one continuous story. And it's interesting too is what the comic world has been changing for some time, in the sense of you have a lot of people that came in after my generation. Even in your generation, they shifted more towards manga. It became more popular, and I think it happened for a lot of different reasons. I think in a large part is because there was if you ask a lot of people my age why they got into comics, it was because, myself included, in the 90s cartoon TV series like X-Men and Spider-Man. But after like the heyday of those, they kind of went downhill a great deal, and you didn't necessarily have the same level of quality, so they maybe weren't bringing in new readers. And manga's a lot easier to jump into. You know, you had the rise of Toonami and Pokemon and video games, so I think that allowed more people to go to that world. Dragon Ball Z, I remember, was huge, especially in my high school years.
Oh, yeah. I was huge into Dragon Ball Z. I wasn't a big fan of manga itself, but I was able to have an appreciation for it and for the art style. And it took me a minute to get used to the fact that everything is the opposite of what we're used to with regular yeah. comics. But it was nice seeing the differences and the similarities between the animation source and of what I was used to watching on television. And even though the manga, you know, for instance, Dragon Ball Z was always behind the television series, it was still fun to kind of keep track and see where they may have changed something, where something may have looked better in the manga or looked better on the television series. And Yeah, that was like a huge anime for me that I was into. I did watch a little bit of Pokemon, but it was kind of beyond me as far as the series.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the video game and the cards, but Dragon Ball Z was kind of my thing for manga purposes. But yeah, I definitely agree that the 90s television series were a lot of what drove me into comics, and the fact that you could walk into your local drugstores and some of the smaller bookstores, and they had comic racks. And my first introduction to Batman was actually the Nightfall comics.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Which my dad picked up for me. And I had a couple of the animated series comics as well when that was going on. And my mom set me up with some G.I. Joe as well, which I had for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that was definitely like where it started, I think, and kind of before it started to kind of fall off the bandwagon.
Yeah, I mean, comics have been up and down. I mean, they're still, as a whole, relatively really popular when you incorporate digital and trade paperbacks and things like that. You know, you're not selling a million copies an issue like sometimes you did in the 90s, but a lot of that too was inflated because of things like variant covers, and you had the speculator boom where people thought, oh, okay, we're going to be able to make money off of these, and that necessarily didn't happen. I kind of feel like that's happening again, where we do have a lot of speculators in large part because of things like YouTube. There's a lot of YouTube channels where, like, I do comic book haul videos myself, but I never in the sense of do it in the, because like I said, like, I think these are books are going to be worth money more so because there are things I like to read and talk about. But I mean, I have no ill will against those that go and try to, you know, do what they can. But I think ultimately for comics to be healthy, they need to have readers, because, you know, talking to some of my the person who does my local comic book shop, I'm like, we had this conversation regarding comic speculators recently, because I don't know if you heard about the controversy behind the comic Batman Damned, but it was the first issue comic series in the new line for DC called the Black Label, which is supposed to be like a mature label. Think like Vertigo. But through the lens of the DC universe more so.
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah, and the first book was this book called Batman Damned, which, you know, was like magazine size. It was a bigger size comic, and it was, you know, had more colorful language. The violence, it wasn't really that more extreme, but there was a scene in which you saw all of Batman. It wasn't like gratuitous or anything of that nature. It was like him, he was getting changed, and he was basically like, it was not to, basically he was full transforming front. And you saw, you know, little Batman, and it became this gigantic thing, and to the point where DC said they were no longer going to re-release that issue. They're going to edit the digital version so it's not in the comic, and any reprints that want to include it. So it then caused that book to like go crazy. People are selling it on eBay. It was normally like a $6 book for like $60, $100, because people think, oh, this is going to be able to make me money. And I maybe it will. I personally think that the height of the book was during that craze. It probably won't ever reach that again.
No.
But all the comic book stores sold out immediately, and I was talking to them saying, oh, that must be a good thing, right? Because you sold all these comics pretty quickly. So then, like, not really, because those people that picked up that first issue, they're not coming back for issue two, where there are people who actually want to read the comic who, you know, didn't get to it because people came in buying, you know, 5-6 copies, or like, you know, or just one or two, but you know, they're not coming back for issue two. They're like, they need readers more so than speculators, because speculators, it's harder to determine, like, there's not as much return investment on someone who's only getting the first issue of a series compared to someone who's going to stick with a series long term. So it's interesting. I mean, they play a part, but it's this weird game with comics compared to, I think, even something like movies, where it's a hobby and people try to still treat it as an investment. So it's a much different type of market to navigate.
See, I think it's kind of interesting that people are still trying to hold on to these as if they're going to be worth like some massive amount of money, because like I've never been one to, like, because I've always looked at them as they're not an investment. It's I'm paying for art, and I've simply bought issues just on the premise alone that I like the cover, and not even open the comic. Like there's been instances where I've had that, but it wasn't necessarily like an issue one or something. Like I've bought all the issue ones of a series I was planning on collecting anyway, and going on beyond the first issue. But like I've never like and yeah, I'll buy some variant covers like depending like on cost. But like overall, like I've never been one of those ones that's like expected to get my return out of it like at some point in the future, because I've sold enough comics because I had to.
Yeah.
For money purposes, that I realize that they're not worth anything, which, you know, whether you buy them digitally or in person, like digitally you get the benefit of not having the space used. But there's something, you know, to be desired for physically flipping pages.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it does happen, right, where a book does become more something. It's not as common with newer books, but it still does happen because of different things. Like, I mentioned Walking Dead, for example. Like, those first issues of Walking Dead are worth tons of money because it was not – there was a limited print run, so there weren't a lot of those issues. And then sometimes things like first appearances or – it does happen on occasion. I don't necessarily think it obviously happens. There's really no predicting it per se. And sometimes you'll see like a book earlier that – like previous – like right now I mentioned Donny Cates. Like his books, Thanos and Venom – those like people were legitimately selling and making lots of money off them, but I also think it's kind of sometimes a self-fulfilling prophecy now in today's world because of things like YouTube channels where people are reading and watching the same information, saying these are the books to get, and then they're kind of feeding into that, so they end up bidding against themselves. So now like it's kind of, you know, causing it to people to spend enormous amounts of money on issue three of Venom because this new character Null debuted, and you know, so they're spending all this money, and maybe 10 years down the line it's not necessarily worth it. Sometimes it is, like, you know, like the first appearance of a major character like Miles Morales or Ms. Marvel or something like that. Like it can get there, but it's a rarity. And I'm like you, I tend to, that's why I just pick books that I want to read. And you know, if I get something, it's often, you know, through sales or something like that. That's like extra because I have a really great local store that does insane sales sometimes. But one thing I do love about Marvel Comics, the quality of the physical comics sometimes isn't great, the paper and stuff like that. But they do, which I wish like every comic book did, they offer a free digital code with every book. So, which I think is great because I have a lot of back issues I have in long boxes that I never really read because in order to read it, I have to drag it out, find it. But if I have a digital copy of it, I can just download it on my tablet and read it whenever I want. So I kind of wish more people did that. Like DC does it from time to time. Well, the independents really never do it, but
DC used to do it, but they also used to charge you a dollar more. Like,
yeah,
on a lot of the new 52 stuff, like they would charge you a dollar more just to get the digital code.
Yeah. Yeah, they raised their prices recently to, they were $2.99 and they went back up to $3.99. They do it now and it doesn't charge you any extra, but it's like random issues, like the first issue of a series. Weirdly, at every issue of Action Comics for some reason, or like the special issue, like if it's the 50th issue, sometimes they add it. But I don't know if they'll increase that now with DC Universe or something, because I know DC Universe has digital copies, where Marvel also has Marvel Unlimited. Which is, I think Marvel Unlimited is a fantastic series, and I'm actually thinking, and I'm kind of writing the script of doing a video about basically being a comic reader on a budget, because, you know, it can be expensive to try to read comics, but it can also be really inexpensive on how you approach it, either through, you know, subscriptions online like Marvel Unlimited or Comicsology Unlimited, but also the local library. Like, I get legitimately hundreds of books from my local library each year, and for free. I tried to start reading manga more because I do this list on the end of each year, the top 100 comics of 2018, and I want to try to make it as inclusive as possible and not just like, you know, Marvel books because I like Marvel. So I've been trying to read more manga stuff, and it's challenging. Like you mentioned, sometimes it's like trying to learn to ride a bike all over again, but backwards, and I've enjoyed some stuff. But I thought about it. I'm trying to construct that video because I think that's a big thing. Because right now, like, I don't go to the movies as much because it's really expensive, and there's really no other option except for waiting for it to get that at the library. But I think movies have a lot of different, or comics have a lot of different avenues to read. You know, when you're, if you're getting stuff on a comic book day, you kind of, you know, you're limited there. But there's so much out there, and even there's a lot of local libraries have things like Hoopla and OneDrive, which are these online subscriptions where you can legitimately, you know, get on your iPad or tablet or computer and read digital, you know, read The Dark Knight for free without having to, you know, download it illegally, just by having a library card. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. They don't think like comics are at libraries, but a lot of libraries now have great comic books. Like my local library is an amazing comic book section, and if it doesn't have something, they're really willing to kind of, if you just, hey, can you get this, or I'm interested in this, and more often than not, they'll, you know, depending on how strong your library branch is, they can either see if there's something within their network or possibly order it for you. So if you wanted to, you know, start reading something, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. I've noticed a lot of comics are starting to show up in our local libraries around here, just because it's another way to get people involved in reading. It's, you know, especially in the day when, you know, everybody's kind of not really wanting to read a lot of the classics. I mean, some people do, but, it, you know, primarily because they're in the TV and the film universe. So often people are wanting to go after those comics, and so if they can boost people's literacy by having them go to the library and actually get these books for free and read them, it's, you know, it's kind of a win-win for both sides. I mean, yeah. The comic industry is getting a win, and so is the local library and people winning by reading. So it's, I used to go to the local library, and that's how I would rent television series, just because I wouldn't want to. I would want to try a show, but I didn't want to necessarily buy them. And more often than not, a lot of the video stores, like pretty much the only video store left around is Family Video. And they're somehow still expanding, which I don't understand how, but I'm thankful for them still being in business. And they're not uber expensive like Blockbuster was back in the day. But I use them periodically to check out new TV shows that I don't necessarily find on services like Hulu or Netflix. And it's very cost-effective way of doing that. So like I definitely see the merit in going to a local library. My wife goes there and for the kids and picks up like handfuls of books every week for these kids, and they just love it.
Yeah, I have 30 books out of the library. I know I have 30 books out because I'm not allowed to get any more until I return some. And I have some on hold right now, so I have to try to. Also, video games too. I know you're a video game player. I just, you know, I don't think as many video games, but I just got the new Madden from the library. I've been playing that. But I was curious too regarding, like, right now, are you reading comics currently, or are you kind of just off and on? I was curious what you're doing.
It's kind of off and on, and it's not that I don't want to read them. It's been more so just trying to find series that I'll enjoy. Like, I kind of was given a bad taste in my mouth from the New 52, and I've read a little bit of when they brought back DC after the New 52, but I didn't have necessarily the money to get back involved that whole shakedown was going. I was going through a job transition. I didn't leave the house. So like, when I used to work at the car lot, I used to, on my lunch breaks, stop at my local comic book shop, and I would go in there and I'd read some comics. I'd buy a bunch of comics, and then, you know, it would kind of be like my go-to place every week. And it's still the same comic shop I've been going to for the last, like, I don't know, 20 years, but
nice.
it's, Yeah, I mean, I like if I go in there, I can still find comics. I sold them years ago when I was broke and needed gas money, but Transformers comics. They never leave the store, but I still check on them periodically to wait for them to drop in price to pick them up again. but yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things that I enjoyed reading them when I did. And I still have some select issues of certain series that are in my tote downstairs, but I just haven't gotten back into anything that was really like grasping my attention.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't read them again if I found something. I've been out of the loop so long. So
yeah, I went through that too, and that's where like Marvel Unlimited helped me catch back up with a lot of stuff, and the library, as I mentioned, and I was kind of got back in when DC Rebirth was happening. I also brought that up because I don't, you know, one thing DC's doing right now too, you talked about getting books at like the corner store, which unfortunately they don't do enough of. I wish they did that more than they do. But what DC's trying to do currently is try to sell comics in more places, and they started doing this thing with Walmart where they have they call them 100-page specials, where it's 100 pages of comics. It's a combination of like reprints of old stories and usually a new story. And there's, you know, they have ones for Batman, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Superman, and I think they're $5. And they're like in these cardboard things. It's challenging because every Walmart's different. I know my local Walmart keeps them where they have like the magic card and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I was curious if like, because I was always wondering like who the hope, I think, for DC was that it would attract, you know, non-comic book readers to try to pick them up because they would see, you know, hey, why not? It's 100 pages for $5. But I think I don't know if it's really having that impact, because I don't know how any like general people traverse that kind of collecting area that has like the baseball cards and stuff like that. It's if you're looking to get into comics, and in most of those stories are pretty self-contained, so you can kind of read them without having the back knowledge that they do have them there. I picked up a couple myself. I picked up a Batman one. No, I picked up a Superman one because it was written by Tom King, and a Justice League one. It has like reprints of like some of the New 52 stuff, but also the Batman one, the Superman one has a story written by Tom King, a new stuff, but it's kind of like a combination of both. So we'll see if that actually, it seems like they're selling pretty well. So, but I don't know who they're selling them to exactly.
Yeah, I would be interested to find out how that's getting sold as well, just because just what their numbers are on it, more than just is trying to appeal to comic collectors. I would think that those would be like better suited in the magazine area, or although I don't know that many people that still read them. I mean, I'm still like kind of old fashioned in that sense. Like, I honestly don't like reading magazines on a tablet.
Yeah.
But that's more so because I like to actually see the page.
I think it makes. I was always wondering why they didn't put it like. I think some people said they were in their toy section, which I kind of get, because like if you have action figures of Batman and Superman, why not have a comic there too? So I think that depends on the store, because you know with Walmart, I have seen like some images of them though that like they clearly were not stacked in the proper fashion you can imagine with Walmart. But I do think that comic books. Stores and or companies are realizing they kind of have to go beyond just the direct market, which is the local comic book store, and try to find new avenues. And I think that was one thing they're trying. And I think it makes sense that even, you know, having those spinner racks at like your local Rite Aid or what have you. But I think if they do that, they have to try to rethink the prices that they make. They have these True Believer comics, Marvel does, that are like reprints of old stories for a dollar. Mm-hmm. Like to me, if I'm Marvel, I'm calling up like CVS and saying, hey, if CVS is still a thing, like why not put these in, like, you know, have a thing, you know, a rack near your checkout counter. I'm sure, like, you know, when you have a parent with a screaming 5-year-old, you're like, maybe we can give them that to try to, I don't know. I think it might be a good way, because you hear a lot of stories from people who their first comic for a lot of people, it wasn't necessarily a comic book store. It was, you know, someplace else, like a grocery store or a newsstand. But now newsstands and grocery stores don't necessarily have them, you know, outside of like a Barnes & Noble, which is, you know, a bookstore.
Yeah, and like I said, my first comics were picked up at a local drugstore, which was basically like Rite Aid at the time before they bought out that company. But I mean that's where I got it. And then there was this bookstore called Little Professor, which was in my local mall, and they used to have a pretty nice comic book section that I would kind of raid in there years ago. And like I think that having like a dollar price point would work really well too, because I know for myself, like I have no problem picking up a dollar Hot Wheel car for the kids, like as a here you go, you know, here's a little token, be quiet, you know. So I mean, like I think that would be like the perfect price point, or $1.25 or something, you know, something reminiscent of when comics were around that when we were growing up. I know that they weren't quite that low, but still, it's I remember them being, you know, like $1.80 or something, or $1.90 or something like that. But I used to also, I don't know if this is a thing anymore that they still do. I don't think so, but do you know if they still do subscription-based, like where they mail them to you?
Yeah, I know Marvel does. I don't know if DC still does it, but I know Marvel still has that, has those services that they'll mail them to you. Which is kind of good too, because sometimes you can actually get like a pretty solid discount where like you're paying a bulk price rather than issue by issue.
Because what Marvel guaranteed.
Because what Marvel likes to do is like the first issue sometimes is an extra dollar, but if you do that subscription, you kind of can avoid that. I'm not sure if DC does, or I know Valiant. They have bundles like that you can do through your local comic book store, which is another like kind of indie publisher. But yeah, they do still exist. I don't know if they're as popular as they once were, but I do know some people who do use them.
Because that's how I used to get predominantly most of my comics in the 90s was, or at least in the early 90s, was I used to get everything sent through the mail. Whether it was that or like when television shows, like you could buy VHS tapes of like Star Trek episodes, and they would have like two on a tape or three on a tape or something like that, and you could order them through the, because that's how my mom did everything. She ordered everything subscription based, so we would get a delivery every month of various nice. Comics or television shows, and so that was something that I just remembered. But I don't know if you've seen, but Marvel or Netflix actually canceled its first comic book series.
Yeah, I saw that they've canceled Iron Fist, which I wonder if is as canceled as, or if it's going to be canceled, or if they're just going to be kind of combining some shows. I have a feeling that might be what's really happening.
Because I find that kind of interesting, but it that Netflix is kind of starting to actually cancel shows, or at least talk about canceling them, being that nobody knows what they get rated anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they've canceled some, like, some programs, I know, like, was it, some of the talk shows and things like that, some of the sitcoms and things, they have, you know, it's not the first show to be canceled, it's the first Marvel show to be canceled. And I know it's probably the least watched of all the Marvel shows because of how bad the first season was. I haven't watched the second season of Iron Fist, but I heard it was a much improvement, which I'm like, it could be possible not to. But I do wonder if they're going to try to bring Iron Fist and Luke Cage into one book, into one series, because they, for many years, they had the Power Man and Iron Fist book. And they also have the characters, like their side characters, and doing like a Heroes for Hire series. So I wonder if that's an avenue they're going to go, or if it has anything to do with the fact that Marvel is getting their own, or Disney, I should say, is getting their own series, and they're supposed to be doing some stuff for that. So maybe Marvel's not. I don't know who has the power to say what's canceled and what's not, but I do wonder, like, if it's just a sign of things to come, because pretty soon, with Marvel announcing that they're going to be having some like miniseries on their network starring like major movie characters like Loki and Scarlet Witch, if Netflix is like, it's not maybe worth it because they're not going to be able to compete with that level of production. I don't know, but I am psyched for season three of Daredevil. So
I wonder too if it's if they're starting to kind of see the writing on the wall, and that it may be kind of a contracted thing between Disney and Netflix that may be allowing the characters to be freed up almost in the vein of like the television or the film rights to certain characters.
It's possible. I don't know how the rights work for those compared to, you know, the movies, obviously, or, you know, they had to come to that Sony deal to get Spider-Man. You know, from my understanding is that Netflix retains the rights to all those, you know, those characters, but, you know, Marvel's getting all the X-Men characters, so you never know. Like, it could be down the line if that's the next target. I don't know. I do worry about having too much, because honestly, right now, the last series of Marvel TV that I've watched was Punisher season one. Like, I didn't watch the last season of Luke Cage. I didn't watch the last season of Jessica Jones or Iron Fist. I have interest in them, but it was just getting the time. I wasn't as excited about them, and I was compared to other series and other things out. And I just wonder if, like, you know, we're hitting a wall when it comes to just how much content's out there, especially streaming wise, that maybe that they don't have the cachet they did when they first debuted.
Yeah, I'm like, I used to watch all the superhero shows that were on, at least like, you know, like Gotham, mm-hmm. Supergirl, Arrow, Legends, The Flash, and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then Netflix got all their various series going, and then some of the other ones would show up on other stations as well, and then didn't last very long anyway. And I think there comes a point where, like, there's only so many shows you can actually physically watch.
Exactly.
To where you have to kind of pick and choose what's your favorites. Like, the DC universe, like, I know some of the listeners of the show like Titans and some of the concepts of the other shows that are coming to the DC universe. Like, I have like zero investment in any of the stuff that's coming to the DC universe app. Aside from like maybe the Harley Quinn show, just because I'm curious and it's animation.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm not a huge fan of Doom Patrol. I've not read a lot of them, but I'm just interested in seeing it, honestly, because seeing Brendan Fraser in a series like that. But I am somewhat more interested in the Swamp Thing TV show, because I think that could be good if it's done right. But I don't know. I've not watched Titan, so I don't know how good that is.
Yeah, the Doom Patrol has me intrigued just because Brendan Fraser, and then I believe Kelsey Grammer's tied to it too.
Oh, nice.
As a character, as some kind of a old doctor character type thing. And in the Swamp Thing, like I believe they had like an 80s or 90s Swamp Thing show back in the day too.
They had two films, like, and one was directed by Wes Craven. And then there was another one. I don't know if they had a TV. I know they had a TV cartoon. I don't know if they had a TV show. They might have. It's crazy with stuff they had for, you know, there was a Flash TV series, so who knows?
The Flash TV series, and then they tried to make like a really crappy Justice League.
We've come a long way.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I think I am remembering the film, the 1982 Wes Craven film of Swamp Thing. I think I'd seen it briefly. I know that they're going to introduce him, or they've at least insinuated that in DC Universe, or not DC Universe, but Legends of Tomorrow, to kind of connect it to the DC Universe app. Because these are all basically produced by the same group. But I'm a little intrigued by that as well, but I think like I've even dropped, like, I mean, I started watching Black Lightning last season, which was really good. It got pretty strong there, had a pretty strong cast. But I've kind of hit this wall of amount of shows that I actually want to watch as opposed yeah. to which ones I was watching just to kind of fill the quota of superhero shows that I was watching. And so like I've dropped a few other ones. So like I'm pretty much just watching The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow were the only ones that I actually like want to watch week to week at this point, as far as DC yeah. stuff.
I'm years behind with all those. It was just one of the things where I fell behind, and then I kept falling behind further and further, and I just couldn't. Like, the last thing I saw of Legends of Tomorrow was the first season, which I wasn't really a big fan of.
The first season
I heard it got much better, which I get. You could tell there was an idea that we're there, just didn't come together. But yeah, like I just kind of fell behind with that. The one thing that I'm really looking forward to, if it does actually come out, when it comes to like the DC stuff, is the new season of Young Justice, because that's a fantastic cartoon. So I'm excited to see if they actually do have the season 3 like they've indicated that they would.
Yeah, that I did enjoy Young Justice. I watched that a couple times on Netflix when that was on there, to kind of give it its run. To try and get it a new season, because it definitely needed one.
Yeah.
But it was kind of the closest thing we've gotten to the DC Animated Universe from, like, the Bruce Timm verse that we've gotten since.
Mm-hmm.
Although, new cast. So, and then now we're getting, like, prequel series of everything, whether it's, like, Krypton or the new Pennyworth kind of.
Yeah.
I don't have any investment in any of that. I don't know what you feel about it, but
so I don't, like, you never know what could be good. Like, that's always my when it comes to anything. Like, when people tend to write things off because of an idea or something seems bad, like, because, like, who needs another Joker movie? But then people start seeing images for the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie and it seems like people are turning them around. Like, I saw people talking about the Pennyworth show and think it'll be stupid. And it's like, I don't know. It might be good. Like, I never thought Legion, which is a character in X-Men, who's always been kind of like just not a great character personally. But his TV show is fantastic. So who knows what he can do? I mean, so it could work. Will it? I'm not sure. I thought Gotham would work better than it did. I'm saying that as someone who only watched the first two seasons, because I thought they would make it more like the book Gotham Central, which is like NYPD Blue in the Gotham universe. I have not watched Krypton. I don't have cable, so if it's not streaming on any service, I don't have access to it.
Yep, same boat.
If it comes available, like I'll be honest, like that one, I'm like, how are you going to do a series about Krypton? And then I'm hearing people saying it's actually really good. And I'm seeing like they're bringing Lobo into it. I'm like, they're really going full force with it. So I'll check that out once I have access to it. But that's my thing. I just try to, no matter what the idea might be on the surface, you never know what it'll turn out to be. It could end up being fantastic. Like, I never thought I'd want to need another Planets of the Apes movies, but those ended up being great. So we'll see. I try to do the wait and see approach for most things.
Yeah, I try not to, like, I got on that bandwagon when the new Star Trek series came out of wanting to hate it from the get-go. And then I went through it as a week-to-week reviewer on Future Imperfect, and eventually changed my tune as the series went on. And I was like, okay, like, I give it kudos for this. I like what it did here. And I tried to stay more on the positive side than not necessarily what I didn't like about it, or that it tried to fit in the this very specific time period of the canon, even though there were aspects that I still had problems with, and there's a few I still have issues with, but they're planning on it elaborating on it as the series goes on, and I've kind of come to this conclusion that every show kind of sucks in its first season because it doesn't really know what it's doing.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Just so with that, if someone who's never really watched Star Trek before, would I be able to, minus the films, would I be able to like pick up that series and kind of understand what's going on?
Yeah, because I mean, it takes a few characters from the original series and kind of uses them. So like it makes nods to the original series, and there's a few characters that show up, but for the most part, like everybody in it's completely new. Like, there's no characters that are really recycled from anything. Season 2 does pull from the original series cast. And when I say the original series cast, I mean the Captain Pike Enterprise, not the Captain Kirk Enterprise. Because it's still 10 years before Kirk gets the Enterprise. So it's Captain Pike, and you get Spock, who's a junior officer on the Enterprise, and Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, his wife played the first officer named Number One, which is being played by Rebecca Romijn.
Really?
On season two. And the guy that was in the Inhumans show that got canceled, the lead male actor on that, I don't know what character he played on that, but he plays Captain Christopher Pike for season two.
I think he probably played Black Bolt, was the main character in that show. Interesting. So, like, because I apologize, because I am a noob when it comes to the lore of Star Trek. So, Captain Pike, was he actually a character in the original series, or he was just someone who was referenced in the series?
Well, he actually was in the original pilot. So, like, the only character that was taken from the original pilot and reused with William Shatner was Leonard Nimoy's Spock. He was the only carryover aside from the Enterprise from the original pilot for the second pilot. Other than that, like, nothing, like, everything else, every cast member was different, the tone was different. So he was only in that one episode and never actually fully aired. But they used it as more or less filler on a season two or three episode called The Menagerie, where some horrible accident happened to Pike and Spock commandeers the Enterprise to deliver him to this planet that he visited on the original pilot of these aliens that more or less could create illusions with your mind and give you... so if, like, your body's basically wheelchair bound and you're unable to move, you're like almost like Stephen Hawking, they could make it so that you wouldn't be confined by the shell of your body. You could still live like a normal life, you know, as far as you knew. So it was an interesting thought anyway. And so they're going to kind of reference some of that information in season two, but you really wouldn't have to watch the original Star Trek really to get any of that. It's kind of building it a whole new setup, but then if you watch everything after that, you'll kind of get the picture. So okay. It's standalone, but it still fits in the canon.
Yeah, because I actually have that CBS All Access thing, and I was like, maybe I'll watch it, but I'm like, I don't know if I'll get it, like, if I need to go back and, like, watch the original Star Trek stuff. So it's good to know.
Yeah, it's very much like you could, because a lot of the stuff they've kind of completely changed and updated because of modern technology. So it's not as dated as the original stuff. So, but yeah, it's interesting. So like I said, it's kind of the same boat. Like, I try not to, since that, I've kind of tried to keep my options open. Like, I'll check something out. I may not, like, stick with it, but I'll at least give it its, you know, due, you know, process of checking it out, like I did with, like, Black Lightning and various other shows that I've kind of tried to watch and then decided, nah, it's not for me.
I get you. It's hard to, you know, like, there's a lot right now. What, there's like 20 series right now of just comic book stuff, like, straight up, if you can include Walking Dead, two series, all the CW stuff, the Netflix stuff, now all those stuff coming out from, it's insane. It's impossible. And I think we'll maybe hit a wall in the sense of, like, you know, we're seeing Iron Fist being canceled. I'm certain we'll see other shows. I know Gotham's coming to an end. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got canceled. There used to be, I think, a point in time where a lot of those stuff was bulletproof, but I think now it's not as much. Like, you know, I don't think more Iron Fist being canceled, you know, if you said that 5 years ago to me, or whenever Daredevil, that, like, you know, Iron Fist would only last two seasons and being canceled, I'd be like, wow, that's really shocking. But considering just, you know, Defenders not being as good as many hoped and Iron Fist not being what people wanted, and it seems like Disney's interest is elsewhere, I think it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of see the bubble bursting as far as like television's concerned, and maybe like focusing down on certain aspects and characters. Like CW's already kind of planning on doing a Batwoman show if the soft launch from the crossover episode works, but which they'll probably launch it. I mean, let's be for real.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like in 2 years we're not gonna have any of the shows. I just think it'll, you know, you're only so much airtime. So I don't know how much Arrow's been on, what, for 6 years now, seven years now. Yeah, I mean, that's a long time for any show. Like that's, I guess Smallville was on for 10 years, but
well, Supernatural's got to be 13.
Jeez,
I'm like, that one can end any time now.
Yeah, yeah. So
slot.
We'll see, but yeah.
But yeah, that's basically the conversation I was going for. Anything that you'd like to tease on your next episode of Starting Points or another of your video series that you're working on?
Yeah, so I would just, hopefully I'll be dropping Starting Points every Sunday. I'm going to be my attempt. Well, I'll just be going through that week's comics. I'll see if you want to check that out. I've been trying to do more reviews as well on specific single issues. And I've been doing some videos where picking out some aspects of my comic collection that going through, like I did one where I went through all my Age of Apocalypse books. I'm going to possibly do one going through all my books connected to Civil War, the massive crossover that went on. And but yeah, I think that's it. And I know the other big thing that we're working on, not just me, but all of Geekcast Radio, is just the top 100 wrestlers stuff that's going on. So I don't know if I'll be part of that, but I'll be providing a list and listening along with everyone else. So
I'll be a part of the graphics team.
Yeah, I'll be in the audience holding a sign saying Ric Flair number one. So there you go.
Nice. I'll be like Macho Man.
Yeah, he's up there too. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. Of the old guard anyway. Yeah, and I'm hoping, because time's gotten away from me on this, that I can get the new website going sooner rather than later. I may fix what I can and then just work on the little things as I go so that I can go ahead and launch it before I get tired of the layout. Because I've been looking at it for about 6 months now. one of the things I like about it, though, is I'm going to be able to incorporate the video show into the website, and people will be able to watch it as well as read through the episode post that whether you decide to like write a review or write something in there, mm-hmm. they'll be able to scroll down and kind of you know how like on some websites the video follows you as you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll be able to do that.
So hopefully it doesn't annoy people. You know, I know like Yahoo is notorious for that, where they have like those autoplay videos. But
no, I'm not one of the autoplay people. I hate that.
Yeah, yeah, which is like evil because it's like I clicked on a reading article, not a speaking article. So, but yeah, no, that's cool. I was just joshing. But yeah, so stay tuned to Geek. You know, if you're listening to this and want to subscribe, do so. I tend to do at least 3 videos a week is usually what I try to shoot for, covering mostly comics. But I also have some lists coming up. Like I mentioned, I'll be doing my top 100 comics of 2018. That usually goes drop in the beginning of December, and might be doing some best of lists for comics videos as well. I'm trying to do some like real comic editing. In the past, I've just kind of shot and talked. Trying to be hip with all the new kids and what they're doing. Let me know what people are thinking, if they've been enjoying it. I like I said, the Starting Points video did pretty well, so it seems like people I'll be keep doing that as long as people are watching. So
awesome. So until next time, get altered geeky with the altered geeks.